To remind all participants, this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the CCI call on the 24th of January, 2012. On the call today, we have Rosemary Sinclair, Sarah Langdon-Hall, Carl Saguire on Adobe, and we're going to get him connected very soon, Tobias Mahler, Steve DelBianco, and Olivier Crépin-Leblanc. From staff, we have Barry Cobb and Julie Headland, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. We also have apologies from Wendy Zeltzer and Don Berard. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you, and over to you.
Great. Thank you, Natalie. Rosemary, before we get started, I'd just like to announce that Julie Headland will be taking over for Margie Milam. Margie's somewhat busy with the whole RAA stuff, so kind of swapping out and helping me out with this working group.
Okay.
And you'll see before you, we've got a proposed agenda and an option actions items list that we probably ought to run through real quick. So you can kick us off. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Did anybody have any comments on the agenda before we get into it? If not, then if we can just go through the action items, Barry.
Great. Thank you, Rosemary. This is Barry. The first one is to determine if ICANN can acquire wholesale pricing of domains from registries and an automated method to collect pricing from registrars. I'm disappointed to say as I still do not have a response back yet, and that's really about the only update I have for that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go ahead and continue to carry that one over. I think based on some secondary comments from the last meeting, it probably may not make a whole lot of difference with respect to how the working group carries forward. But anyway, I'm still pressing to get the response back from them.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Barry. The next one is mine, and I've been in touch with the head of School of Economics, and he's given me the name of one of their academics who's been doing some work on diversity measures in the context of assessing competition. It's summer in Australia, so that academic is away at the moment. But when they come back, which will be probably mid-February, I'll get onto them and see if I can just get some simple ideas that we can put into this work at this relatively early stage, and then enough so that if people want to pursue it later, they can do that. Okay, so that's mine. Now, the third one is Cheryl and or Olivier.
No, we discussed that last time, and I thought we decided that we weren't really going to bother trying to screw down a perspective of the measures as raised.
Mm-hmm. That's
in
probably
fact, if I may.
Yes, Olivier.
May I add something, please? Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. Actually, since the last time that we've spoken, I have received an email from Annalisa Roger, who apologized profusely for not having replied earlier because she had email problems. But then she didn't follow up after that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really up to us whether we wish to wait or just mark it as complete. I think that judging from taking the transcript of the meeting at the time, it was pretty clear that I think she was just making a suggestion on there. But if I do receive follow-up from her, I will forward it to us. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Olivia. So we'll regard that as closed for the time being. The next one, Barry, that's complete. And then Steve, the third draft, that's complete. And then Barry, the compliance breach metrics, that's complete. So I think that is all our action items, unless there's any comment.
Correct. Rosemary, I did, Barry, I did send out a presentation from the compliance team that contains the breach metrics and some of the WHOIS accuracy mm-hmm. metrics that they track. As we get into some of the line items in our metrics matrix, maybe we can pull up that presentation if we wish to dive mm-hmm. deeper into understanding what they do. But we do have that information.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosemary, mm-hmm. just to continue on, I omitted a seventh action item here, and that was I did send out a doodle poll about a possible meeting on the 31st. I've only received seven responses, and we're just above 40 or just above 50% on who can attend and who cannot attend. So it's really up to the team and where we probably conclude today whether we wish to try to fit in that meeting on the 31st or not.
All right. Well, could you remind us, Barry, just at the end of the meeting to come back to that? Because mine would have been a yes, except I'm travelling. So it really depends, I guess, whether there's work that we want to handle. So let's come back to that at the end of the call.
Very good.
Okay. So now our third agenda item is to review the working group charter to reconfirm the work direction. And we're going to do this by actually looking at the charter.
I can bring this up. After a conclusion of the last meeting, we didn't cover this particular action item, and that's why this is being carried over. Mm-hmm. I did send out an email just kind of highlighting some of what had occurred in the last meeting, and I did take a look at the charter. You know, my own personal interpretation, I think we're pretty much spot on. Give me just a second, and I'll bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
And we can review it here online. Okay, you should be able to see that in your window by now, hopefully.
Yep. Yes.
Okay, first section, section one is working group identification. That should be mm-hmm. good. Section two is mission, purpose, and deliverables. If you'd like me to read this off, I can. Or
yes, perhaps. Yes. Perhaps if you could quickly just read it for us, Barry. It keeps disappearing off my screen for some reason. I'm just
very
doing
good.
iPad, so that might be why.
Okay. Mission and scope. The working group aims to develop a report for consideration by ESOs, ACs, in developing their response to the request arising from the following board resolution on December 10th, 2010. Mm-hmm. Whereas the area of consumer choice, competition, and innovation is one of the strategic areas for ICANN and the 2010-2013 strategy plan with the link, whereas ICANN is committed to promoting competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice in the affirmation of commitments, whereas if and when new GTLDs, whether in ASCII or other language character sets, have been in operation for 1 year, ICANN has committed to organize a review that will examine the extent to which the introduction or expansion of GTLDs has promoted competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice. Resolved on that date, the ICANN board requests advice from ALAC, GAC, GNSO, and CCNSO on establishing the definition, measures, and three-year targets for those measures for competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice in the context of the domain name system. Such advice to be provided for discussion at the ICANN public meeting in San Francisco, March 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Objectives and goals, produce a report to be given to each of the ACSOs for their consideration. The working group report could be considered by GNSO, CCNSO, GAC, and ALAC in forwarding advice to the ICANN in response to the board resolution. Each ACSO may act independently on the working group report and may endorse all, part, or none of the report findings.
Mm-hmm.
deliverable and time frames. The working group is expected to carry out activities identified in this charter in order to produce an update report to the GNSO Council at the ICANN-DACAR meeting. And then the remainder is just pretty much the standard template.
Okay, that's good. And are there any comments on that? Anyone wanting to pick anything up from the last meeting? And I don't think I'm seeing hands on my iPad Adobe Connect.
No hands are up.
Yes, okay, that's good. We might just have to watch that as the call proceeds. Okay, so if we're all right with that, then if we can go back to our agenda, which I'm not seeing at the minute.
Rosemary.
Some new format. Sorry. Is that Olivier?
Rosemary, it's Olivier, yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Rosemary. Just wanted to ask one question. When would this be effectively finalized, and when can I send this over to the ALAC?
The charter, Olivier?
Yes.
Okay, well, the charter's been accepted by GNSO Council, so I would have thought that it would be ready for ALAC to consider whether ALAC wanted to endorse that as well. Are there any other thoughts on that issue?
Agreed. Share it and encourage any and all ACSOs to either embrace or adapt it to their needs. But at this point, is it a little bit cart before the horse? I mean, we're about to put advice out to the community in the next few weeks. Do we want the charter process to go underway at CCNSO or at ALAC?
Yes.
If ALAC decided to vastly improve the charter, we would be unable to meet specific requests in the charter, given that we would be finishing our draft for community review at about the time ALAC would finish the charter changes.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I asked the question.
Yes.
Although I wouldn't foresee much in the way of proposed charter changes. The ALAC doesn't need to, of course, endorse this at all. We can conduit it back to the way it's written. It's conducive to share the outcomes anyway.
Mm.
May I make a suggestion that Cheryl, Olivier, and any other folks here from ALAC, by all means, share the charter, and I hope maybe at the end of today we could share a draft of our advice letter. It's in an effort of inclusiveness and keeping everybody apprised, but I don't want to suggest that the ALAC undertake the work of revising and approving a charter. We'd rather them save their time and weigh in on the actual advice letter when we post it.
Well, I think, Steve, I think as Cheryl said, I'm not quite sure whether the ALAC has the time anyway as well to work heavily on the charter and try to change things on it. I think the charter in itself looks fine. It's probably the advice letter that the ALAC will have to concentrate on. So we're in agreement here, and if I do pass it over to the ALAC, which I probably will at the end of this call, I will add that at this moment in time, I don't think either ALAC members nor ALAC staff have any bandwidth to start redoing charters and do process work when really what we want to do is actual proper work.
Cheryl,
thank
you.
Yes, Cheryl.
Just on that, Olivier, without wishing to teach my grandmother how to suck eggs, I think if you just give it to the ALAC list as a piece of advice informing them that this is now the charter has come back to the work group, the work group has accepted this charter, and that as a constituent part of this work group, the ALAC representation on this has been very strong, the least of which has been through you, and that all of the ALAC representatives on this work group are more than happy with this charter. So we just basically toss it to them and say, here you are, children, this is what we've done, not actually ask advice. And in the same time, say, here is a early draft of, this will be discussed in full as a piece of advice letter. We want to have it on our Costa Rica agenda, blah, blah, blah. And so give them the work to do at the same time as tell them not to touch the bloody charter with a barge pole. Thank you very much.
Right. So, Olivier, are you happy then with what your next step with the charter in ALAC is?
Absolutely, Rosemary. Thanks very much.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so now I've lost the agenda again. Sorry about that.
Why were we looking at it on the agenda, on our agenda for this work group? Last time I looked at that, I thought it was all a fait accompli. I'd already, you know, made any comments on version 1.0, and I did wonder why we were chewing over it again.
I think it was just to remind ourselves, Cheryl, before we finalise the draft advice to release to the community.
Sure. So if it's simply making sure we're road mapping back to the actual job at hand, then that's fine.
Yes.
I just wondered why we were being asked to comment on something that I thought was well and truly put to bed.
Yes. No, that's my recollection of why we just wanted to have a quick look at it. All right. Thank you. Now, as I say, I can't see our agenda, but I think we're moving on to the next item, which is that the draft advice letter, Barry?
Yes, Rosemary. They're actually swapped. We were going to go through the matrix first and then the advice letter, but I think I recommend going through the advice letter first and then we can jump over into the matrix.
Okay. So, Steve, would you mind taking us through this? I sent some comments, but I think I was commenting on the previous draft, and I only sent my comments late this afternoon, so my apologies for that. But would you mind leading us through this discussion of the draft advice letter?
I could do that, and Tobias is on the line. He sent some markups. So,
yes.
Tobias, if you'll have your copy open, you can raise your comments, questions, and edits when we get to that particular section. Is that okay with you?
Yes, absolutely.
Great.
Barry, as we go through this, remember the section of the letter that contains the actual tables from the Excel sheet, if it's at all possible, we should do them in parallel. As we go through a line in the advice letter that corresponds with a row in the Excel sheet, if you have questions, let's cover them all in one pass rather than do a full second pass through the Excel sheet. Do you think that would work?
See, this very sounds good to me.
Yes, Rosemary also, I think that's a good idea.
I would just, this is Barry, I'd like to remind the team that Excel will not show up very well in the shared feature, so I advise those to have the spreadsheet open next to them.
And Barry, you sent that around on, I believe, the 12th, and it's V0.5 is the Excel sheet, is that correct?
Correct.
V0.5 in an email from Barry on the 12th.
Okay, got it open.
Great.
And finally, before I dive in, other than Rosemary, I saw your comments. Mm-hmm. Tobias, I know Cheryl had a definitional question. Are there anyone else on the call that circulated edits that I failed to catch? Great, thanks. So we can dive right in. And Tobias, I'm looking at the first page. On the first page, Rosemary didn't have any edits, but Tobias, did you?
No, I don't think so. This is Tobias.
Great. Second page, Tobias. You added, you wanted a link to our charter, a hyperlink to the charter. Makes complete sense. We'll do that.
Yep.
And at the bottom of that page, you said it was somewhat repetitive.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not a major issue. It's just if we are able to shorten the document, then it's more likely to be read.
Great.
So
good point.
Basically, you're just repeating what you said above.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosemary, in the middle of this page, there's a paragraph that begins with the words, the fifth paragraph down, it starts with the words, the working group.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosemary, would you like to tell us about the change you recommended there?
Yes, it's a bit, would you mind reading it out, Steve? Because
not at all.
Trouble toggling from screen to screen, but the background to my comment was that I felt, given that this is a tricky set of issues, I felt that the closer we stayed to the board resolution, the better. So I suggested slightly different construction. Would you mind reading it, Steve?
In the middle of the page where I say, with guidance, the working group understands that the purpose of the advice is to provide ICANN's board with guidance on how to blank. We said manage and measure the effectiveness of the program. Mm-hmm. What Rosemary's suggesting is on how to advice on how to conduct a review that will examine the extent to which the introduction or expansion of GTLDs has promoted competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, Rosemary, you're correct that that's part of our objective,
mm-hmm.
is to give them advice on the review. But remember, that's not... That the reason that Bruce Tonkin's resolution was passed in December of 2010
mm-hmm.
is because he wants ICANN management
mm-hmm.
to both manage and measure the effectiveness of their program
mm-hmm.
starting now, not just at the end of 2014 when the review begins.
Yes.
So I think it's both. Would you be comfortable with working both sentiments in? In other words, I use your sentence to replace what I had, but add a sentence to say furthermore or moreover,
mm-hmm.
the purpose, another purpose is for the community to discuss, debate, and even adopt definitions and metrics that can be used to actively measure the campaign even before the review is conducted in 2014.
Yes, no, I'm happy if that wider context is drawn around the more specific task in the resolution, in the board resolution.
Great. So we'll include your edit, and then I'll wordsmith the last sentence of that paragraph
mm-hmm.
so that it's in addition to, but not instead of, the sentence you just put in.
Yep, sure. That's good.
Any other edits from the folks on the phone for page 2? Let's go to page 3. There's a typo in the fourth paragraph. I have any entity takes. Of course, the word takes goes away. I want to give Cheryl a chance to regale all of us with her Atkins razor tail about the definition of consumer. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Leave the bloody thing as is. There you go.
Well, it's a very informed comment, Cheryl. Thank you.
For the transcript record, I suppose I should say something, though. I ruminated over various versions of what could be added to expand or exemplify some of the issues that I was concerned about on previous calls. Every one of the versions, one of which I put into the chat transcript for today, so it will be to the record as well, mm-hmm. is an example of how clumsy they became and how it's much better to do more with less. So Occam's razor was applied, and
mm-hmm.
it's a leave it alone suggestion. Thank you.
Got it. Thank you. Let's go to the consumer trust
mm-hmm.
definition, and both Tobias and Rosemary have points. Rosemary's was the shortest, so I'll brief that first. Rosemary looked at the word for consumer trust in the notes that I have underneath. And Rosemary, you said where I wrote ICANN policies, you'd like to put in parens rather than the operator's policy. Is that right?
No. Sorry, Steve. The way I was reading the sentence, it was ambiguous because it talks about, let me see if I can pull up that second note, I think. Is it the second note, Steve, or the third? It's
third note.
Third note, if we can pull that up on the screen. It was just unclear to me whether we were talking. Here we go. Now, I've got to go back down. Note 3.
I think it's note 3. I'm not sure.
Note No, it's the last line in note one.
Thank you.
The registrant will also trust that ICANN will hold the GTLD operator to its promises and policies and any applicable national laws. And when I read that, I thought, well, you could interpret that by saying that ICANN will hold the GTLD operator to its own promises and policies, that is, the operator's promises and the operator's policies and applicable national laws, whereas what I think our compliance framework is that we want to hold the GTLD operator to their promises and to effective implementation of ICANN policies and, thirdly, applicable national laws.
Agreed. I'll make that edit. That's great. Yep. Good catch.
Okay. Yep. Okay, thanks.
Tobias, I know you're there. So you had several questions on this page.
Yes.
And I did want to give you one element of background. We had arrived at these definitions quite some time ago, and so edits to the definitions would have to bring a far broader group of our working group in. So with that qualification, why don't you lead us through your concerns?
Okay. My first concern was simply readability, and my basic feeling was that the consumer trust definition was a bit too difficult to read, too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that part of it was because even though we had defined consumers in the first place, we don't use the word consumers in the text of the definition.
Mm-hmm.
So my first suggestion is simply to remove registrants and users.
Mm-hmm.
And rather put in consumers. So that would be consumer trust refers to the confidence, consumers, and then it continues. So and then there's a second occurrence also of registrants and users, and that would then turn into consumers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this first point is simply about simplifying the definition.
Let's do a quick straw. This is Steve. That's totally fine with me. Everyone else on the call have any concerns with getting rid of registrants and users and replacing them with the word consumers in the definition of consumer trust?
Rosemary here. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm happy with that as well. But when Tobias finishes with all of the changes, all of which I'm happy with, I'll hasten to add, can you come back to me, please?
Okay, it's Olivier here. I do have a concern because not all users are consumers.
Hang on.
It comes back to the definition of our consumer.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I want to go to at the end of it all.
Right, we're relying upon people to be so policy-focused that they'll look up at the definition above. So that you do gain a tiny bit of readability because it's shorter. But it definitely can be confusing because people won't know that that's a defined term.
That's where I wanted to come back to, Steve, so if I can jump in now before Tobias continues. I think what we need to do to make this part work is really pull out, bring out, boldface, stick it at 65-point, I don't care what the definition of consumer is designated to be.
Mm-hmm.
It gets lost in the text. And I know this, it's probably why I felt, we needed something more to exemplify it. But in fact, the other way, even though I'm happy to leave it exactly as it is to really make it pop. So you can't look at this page, this document, or have anything to do with the work this is on about without knowing that the definition of consumer is.
Wow, I find myself convinced by Cheryl that the word savings is not worth the potential loss of clarity. And I would suggest maybe we leave it alone, too.
Yes, it's a good point.
We're only saving, we're turning three words into one in two instances in the word consumer.
Mm. If I may, Tobias, I know it's repetitive, and it is, but we are wrote learning the children to get their arithmetic right, just at this stage.
Sure. I'm happy with leaving it as it is. It's mm-hmm. just that as I read it, I found it a bit too long, and my perception is that perhaps people get lost on the way somewhere.
Mm.
But if you think it's clearer in the longer version, then maybe we just leave it. In my mm-hmm. eyes, it's not clear the way it was. But that may have to do with the fact that I'm a bit more recent to this work. But if the majority here feels that mm-hmm. it's better to leave the whole thing in, then that's fine. My initial thought is that if we are able to split the problem into several parts, as we did defining first consumers and then consumer trust, then we have a bit more clarity. But if you think that people won't remember that consumer is defined just above, then okay, so be it.
Okay, I think that's a consensus to leave that as it is, but let's keep the suggestion to remove the word can, as in can have.
Yes.
And then when I, Tobias, from registrar to registry, in an earlier discussion, we took that out, the words from registrar to registry, since it's not necessary. People understand that consistency of resolution involves registrar to registry. That was something that Wendy had asked for at one point, but I don't believe there's a need for it.
Okay, that's very good. I just noted that in the second occurrence, I think it was included. That's on a later page.
Okay.
And also in the Excel file I looked at, it was included there.
Right. In the Excel file, Barry and I will work hard to make that Excel file consistent with the document in places where we've edited the document.
Perfect. I'm happy with taking it out.
Got it. Now on consumer choice. Again, the same thing. Keep registrants and users, because nobody will do the work of looking up at our consumer definition.
Okay.
Actually, this one I do have a problem with, Cheryl, here.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Well, only this is one of those where we need to have all the words in, and I know, Tobias, you're probably hanging your head and going, why? And I agree, I prefer less words as well. Just harking back, Olivia, the amount of time we spent in the ALAC room at Dakar because, you know, the dreaded words registrants and users were not clearly seen to mean internet users and consumers. I'm wondering whether this is one of those times where the more might be better than less. Or that we insist that we put the asterisk or a marker next to the words in the titles, consumer choice and consumer trust, and just have that asterisk up with the definition of consumer further up the page. I just don't want people scanning the document, as people tend to do, getting back into the different arguments, which in our case includes whether or not consumer means one has to have had a transaction, or is it too inclusive of internet users who are not transacting, etc., etc. Olivia, am I overreacting, or do you think the children will have settled by the time we get to the next meeting?
Thank you, Cheryl. It's Olivia here. I was even going to suggest coloring the text in various different colors and put in little diagrams with no more than 6 or 7 lines in order to get their attention. But no, I agree with you. Yep.
Yeah, but I was suggesting we keep the words registrants and users in consumer choice.
And I'm saying leave consumer in as well.
Oh, wait a minute. Registrants and users are roles that can be played by individuals, by consumers, by anyone else. I don't think we want to confuse roles with entities.
Just an asterisk next to consumer choice, taking us back up to our higher definition. higher on the page.
It's Rosemary here. If you were going to do that in consumer choice, wouldn't you have to do the same for consumer trust?
Yes, in fact, that's exactly what I said. Mm. An asterisk next to the word consumer in both those titles that makes people loop back to the definition. Alternatively, give out the colouring in books and the crayons and make them do, you know, write it out 100 times till they get it right.
But you know what? The words consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition are three phrases that we inherited from the affirmation of commitments, and they were carried through with the board resolution. Those are defined words, and we were given the invitation to advise the board on how to define those terms. Mm-hmm. And the way you define a term is you write a sentence to define the term after the term itself. I don't think it makes sense to say the first word of a term has some other definition. We're defining the term consumer trust. And, of course, we're building on the work of defining what a consumer is by saying it's users and registrants.
So, Rosemary here, so should we perhaps say consumer trust is defined as the confidence registrants and users have in the consistency, et cetera, and the same. Consumer choice is defined as the range of options available to registrants and users, da-da-da-da-da.
That would be one where you need to say is defined as and is evident by the range of options.
Yes, yes. So we just pull out very clearly for people that what we're doing is defining those terms using registrants and users.
So the words refers to, the words is evident in, and is evident in all three cases would be replaced by the words is defined as. Is that your proposal?
Yes, that's right. That's my proposal.
I think this is good. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, this is Tobias. I think that would be a good thing to do, because also from a conceptual point of view, it would be useful to distinguish a definition of a concept from the evidence you collect in order to verify whether the thing you're defining is present. So the use of is evident in is a bit misleading.
Right.
So is defined as would be clearer, I would say.
And this is Steve. I would agree with Rosemary's change and Tobias' rationale.
And one
Cheryl.
Further... Sorry, Cheryl.
No, I'm fine.
Rosemary, one further suggestion. Could we move the actual term consumer down so that it's within the grouping, so it sits as a term that is defined with consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition?
Yes, we should repeat it. I mean, we needed to leave that definition. We had all these debates last week, Rosemary. You ought to be glad you weren't there, where we made it clear that the registrants and users are roles that are played by multiple entities, and it wasn't necessary to delineate all the entities. So you need to leave that in place to satisfy that discussion.
Yep.
So I think you're really just saying is to repeat that nice, nifty little one-line consumer definition and repeat it down below in definitions.
That's right.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we have on this page, page 3?
This is Tobias. The next issue, I believe, relates to the definition of competition. However, I'm not sure whether this is a good point in time to actually discuss it, because it is a larger issue which we might have to revisit at a later point in time. The definition talks of the quantity and diversity of GTLDs and TLDs, registry operators and registrars. I think we should, at some point in time, and perhaps not today, revisit this definition in light of the measures we are proposing to verify whether there is competition. Because quantity and diversity of GTLDs, that's already pointing towards the measures, and the definition as such lacks some element of rivalry, which is essential in many definitions of competition I've seen. I've looked through books on competition and competition law and other definitions, and I find that it's not that easy to basically base our definition of competition on a general notion of competition. And I see that we also include some elements of market share in our measures. So, so perhaps at a later point in time, we might revisit the definition of competition and see whether it's possible to align that a bit more with generally accepted definitions of competition in other fields, and in particular in competition law.
Tobias, this is Steve. I'm going to put in square brackets after the word diversity. I'll put bracket and rivalry among bracket. And we'll put a placeholder there. And as you say, after we pass through the measures themselves later in the document, we'll come back and see whether it belongs. And is that okay? And rivalry among?
Yes, rivalry is one of the essential aspects. Perhaps that is sufficient. The difficulty with the present definition of competition is that, particularly in competition law, you would usually look at dominance. Is there a dominant actor? Is there a monopole or an oligopole? And this assessment of competition is not very clearly reflected in the current discussion.
Well, it's because it was never intended to be. The affirmation of commitment charged ICANN with the responsibility of introducing competition, right? And that means more operators competing to host TLDs, more registrars competing to sell them. So that was about competition relative to what ICANN had before the expansion. So we're taking our cues from the affirmation of commitments, the signed commitments that ICANN made, more than we are from competition law.
Yes, but I think there are different elements of competition law one could look at. And I think the affirmation of commitment, the notion of competition used there, is not very far away from the understanding that is present also in competition law. So if you translate that into notions that are used in competition law, then you could say that or at some point in time there was a very strong dominance by one
architect. Well, I got to remind you that even if there was not market dominance in the new TLD space at all, we would still be asked whether there's been diversity among who's running the TLDs. Who are the suppliers? Are they from different parts of the world? Are just a few companies running them all on the back end? Is there a significant quantity of TLDs that are applicable for a registrant to consider? So we end up with a more expansive definition of competition because of what the affirmation said more than what competition law said.
Yes, I think competition law, I'm not talking about the part of competition law that basically talks of abuse of a dominant position. That's completely out of the scope here. But the basic understanding of what is competition as an economic concept, I think that could be very simply aligned with our definition without changing too much.
All right, so in addition to, I wrote, just for a placeholder, I put competition is defined as the quantity, diversity, and rivalry among GTLDs, TLD registry operators, and registrars.
Quantity, diversity, rivalry.
Mm-hmm. What about market share? Isn't market share a central part of competition?
It is, and that's one of the measures we use. The definitions do not have to enumerate the measures. The measures are in the table, three pages below. And in none of these definitions did we seek to list every element from the measures table is part of the definition.
No, I see that. And the point is that I'm fine with most of the measures, but I think what might happen in the future is when people in the GUC or in other places who have a background in competition law and for example, work in competition authorities, are forwarded the document from their GUC representatives. When they look at the definition of competition, they might say, okay, but this is a very, I'm not sure, this is a very special definition of competition. And
that's fine.
It's not that easy to relate it to a general notion of competition.
Right, and I would be afraid to do that if a general notion meant that we would carefully look at market share, because we have old and new TLDs, and when the new TLDs come up, their market shares may be very small by design. If they do a dot bank TLD will have a tiny, tiny share because it's only going to permit chartered banks. So much of this program is designed to splinter the space into tinier little applicable communities. Yes, I know we will have a handful of generic words like .web that will compete head-to-head with .com and .net, maybe even against .info. But I'd hate for us to get so focused on the result of share when that isn't really the goal. We are tasked to create some competition so that multiple companies are competing to be the distributor and the wholesaler of names. I heard a voice. Does somebody else want to get in the queue?
It was Rosemary. And to me, having worked in the area of competition law in the telecommunications industry for many years, to me this piece of work is very importantly defined in the context of the DNS space, plus the board resolution and affirmation of commitments. And I think it is important that we, in a sense, Tobias, distinguish the piece of work that we're doing with reference to those two elements. We're really talking about the DNS and providing some advice in respect to a board resolution that we've been given, rather than leap into the bigger pond of general competition law. We're really looking here at competition policy, which is that one of the objectives of the new GTLD policy is to promote competition and provide greater choice and greater consumer confidence, which are also words that don't really appear when you're looking at competition law as such. You know, there you are talking about the process of rivalry and you get into the arcane area of market definition and so on. So accepting everything that you've said, I think there are some specifics about this piece of work that mean we can be slightly more... slightly looser, if you like, in our terms than we would if we were looking at a piece of legislation.
Well, of course, this is not a piece of legislation, but it's in a way an interpretation of a word that is used in the affirmation of commitment.
Mm.
And the question is, what is the adequate context of that.
But the affirmation came from the JPA and the MOU, both of which said competition was the introduction initially of multiple registrars selling .com names, and that was accomplished 10 years ago. And the word seems to persist in the notion of creating competition to things like .com so that people have more choices. So that's one of the reasons, Tobias, we were so wrapped around the axle on having to deal with two words that were so closely related, choice and competition, right? Because you could have multiple choices as a consumer, but then we realized that what if .com, .web, .biz, and .info were all run by the same entity? If they were, then we would be accused of having choice without competition. So we chose to create a distinction between choice and competition, where competition focuses on the supply side, and that supply side includes registrars, registries, and the operators themselves.
Yes, I'm basically fine with that.
Mm.
Perhaps it's just if we manage to bring in a clear notion of rivalry, and at some point in time reconsider whether market share, what is actually the mm-hmm. role market share should play here. The point I'm thinking about is actually very simple. If you look at very early phases around the dot-com boom, there was a very strong dominance of dot-com. And then obviously this has changed. And I think once we start introducing even a greater number of new GTLDs, wouldn't that do something with the market share of dot-com?
Well, no.
Have a measurable change of that market share?
Decimal points of precision would be necessary to measure that 1 year into the new TLD launch. Think about it. Very slow markup, and many companies that do a new TLD will probably also put it in comp. So, I mean, let's not set ourselves up to fail here. And if, in fact, the competition was achieved 10 years ago with the registrar diversification, why did the Department of Commerce and ICANN sign up for competition as a goal for the new GTLD program? It persisted. It was repeated and embraced as one of the three things that they agreed to be measured on. We've got to figure it out, and maybe the community comment period will identify, maybe it won't, but hopefully it will identify different sentiments for this. But I'm no competition lawyer. I will defer to your judgment area, but I feel as if that could be a constraint on the way you're looking at it, as if this has any legal significance whatsoever, and it doesn't. Legal authorities, competition authorities will hold ICANN accountable for competition law, no matter whether there was an affirmation of commitments or this working group ever existed. In fact, as you know right now, the vertical integration question is being vetted with competition authorities with respect to cross-ownership. So that's happening in a different playing field. This is us trying to put some meat on the bones of the affirmation of commitments and no more.
Rosemary, my suggestion is that we include the word rivalry, as Steve captured, I think, Tobias' idea, and then that word will be a highlight for those people interested particularly in competition law during the public comment period. So if our colleagues in GAC or anywhere else want to make some suggestions, I think that process of rivalry or whatever the phrase was would bring those comments forward, and then we could consider those in our next iteration. How do you feel about that, Tobias?
Yes, I think that would be an improvement. Perhaps it would just be rival GTLDs, TLDs, TLD registry operators and registrars. Does that sound okay?
So how would that read then? We've got, is evident, competition as defined as the quantity and diversity of rival. Not so much rival, is it?
Well,
no. Rivalry may not be relevant to all of the GTLDs.
No, because Dot Bank is not really going to be a rival to Dot Shoe.
Yep.
Exactly right. Every one of these is, in some cases, the more specialized the new TLDs are, that's what purposes mean. They have a purpose to serve the bicycle market, the green economy market, the banking market. Every time they do that, they make a tinier market, and they remove themselves as a head-to-head competitor. Now, having said that, some banks will move into dot bank, but they'll retain their com name for a while, so you won't see a share change. But maybe over time, banks would stay in dot bank and not in dot com at all. A lot of these are dynamics that will take place only after registrants discover some value added at moving.
Peter, strikes me there. There may, in fact, be fit for purpose uses of both or many, depending on what an entity, a registrant, wishes to do. It may be that you wish to market a particular type of use into one name and restrict another type of activity in another.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, exactly. And because we don't want to predict it, nor do we want to tie anybody's concepts of what it is the new GTLD program is supposed to do in a normative sense. We're going to wait and see, let 1,000 flowers bloom. So trying at this point to say to ICANN that we're not going to judge your program as successful unless you've achieved a certain amount of market share reduction or rivalry, I believe that's a slippery slope that says that, you're with me? It's not really, we don't really know for sure if that's what it's all about. It may come out to be completely different.
Okay, Rosemary here with perhaps a suggestion. If we have competition is defined as the quantity and diversity and potential for rivalry among GTLDs, et cetera, et cetera. Does that do it?
Olivia has his hand up as well, Rosemary.
I can't see the hands. Thanks, Cheryl. Olivia?
Okay, Rosemary, thanks. It's Olivia here. I'd be okay with your wording, the potential. But I was just going to say that it is very hard to measure rivalry when some of the new offerings might be managed systems rather than competitive systems. In other words, they might be something that no one's ever heard of or thought of before, but they will be used for a specific purpose. A little bit like the IP addressing system, the way that IP addresses are distributed over the world these days. It's a managed system. It's not a system that would benefit from a competing agency that would dish out IP addresses. In fact, it would probably be worse, since you'd probably end up with the same IP addresses being distributed by both sides. So, I think the potential of rivalry is a very good trade-off. Thank you.
I just pasted in the Rosemary's suggestion for everyone to look at. It's in the chat.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay. Are you, Tobias, are you happy if we go in that way?
I would say that this is perhaps something we should revisit once we have finalized our measures, because because it seems like we are afraid of precluding some specific measures, and basically the measures we propose should be aligned with the overall definition. And I'm not completely sure that many people would understand this element of potential for rivalry as it is in the sentence right now.
Okay, I will put it in square brackets until we come back to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Mm-hmm. No other comments on page 3?
Nope.
Okay. We go all the way now to the advice on measures at the bottom of page 4 here on the screen. In red, I think that's you, Tobias.
What about the note 2 part?
Note 2,
Tobias,
yes.
Is Mark 10.
The last sentence in note 2 is a descriptive statement saying that all stakeholders have an interest in providing choice and avoiding monopoly in order to create an open and informed market for all participants.
Mm-hmm.
This entire paragraph came from Carlos, who's on the phone. Carlos, do you want to explain a little bit more about that?
Thank you, Steve. I think the paragraph is very clear, but I have at this moment a serious problem with my Adobe chat room. So, sorry, I can't read.
Bryos is suggesting deleting the second half of your sentence. If you recall, you wanted a note, Carlos, because like all of us, you were concerned that we were confusing choice and competition. And of course, we didn't have any choice in the matter. Those are words that came from the affirmation. So your suggestion, and you made it initially in Spanish and I had it translated, was that competition is closely related to the idea of consumer choice. In fact, competition and consumer choice can be seen as two parts of the same whole, since both touch providers and consumers of services. And then you said, all stakeholders have an interest in providing choice and in avoiding monopoly in order to create an open and informed market for all participants. And Tobias's suggestion, I'll let him explain, was that that last sentence is more, it maybe doesn't belong there. Go ahead, Tobias.
Well, it is a descriptive statement. So it describes the interests of all stakeholders. And if there is one stakeholder who has a different interest, then the statement may be false. And perhaps some actually do have an interest in maintaining a monopoly. And that's basically fine, because that's a commercial interest. So I'm not completely sure that it actually helps to understand the issue. I would agree that ICANN has an interest in providing choice and avoiding monopoly, and it also has to do it according to the affirmation of commitment, but that's already stated above. So I would prefer to just take it out, because it doesn't really, it's a descriptive statement that may not be completely true.
The entire sentences are descriptive.
No, yeah, okay. But the first two sentences describe the relation between consumer choice and competition.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a matter of definition. We can define that and that's it. But the third sentence is a statement about the interests of certain stakeholders, namely that all stakeholders have an interest in providing choice. And maybe not all stakeholders have that interest. So that's why I would say, why not just omit that sentence? It doesn't really help to clarify the relation between competition and choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's something else.
Yes, Rosemary here. I can see what Tobias is saying. The suggestion of changing all stakeholders to ICANN, so instead of all stakeholders have an interest, it is ICANN has an interest in providing choice and avoiding monopoly, is perhaps a more accurate statement. Is Carlos still on the call?
Yes, he has his hand raised.
Yes, Rosemary,
Carlos.
Thank
yes.
you. I agree with Tobias in relation to the sentence when he said some stakeholders may have monopoly interests. Yes, it's true, but not stakeholders in ICANN, I think. I have another option to the last sentence. Could be all stakeholders in ICANN have an interest in providing choice and in avoiding monopoly in order to create a blah, 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 blah. But the option ICANN is good also for me.
I think ICANN is too narrow. Cheryl here. I'm happy to add ICANN to increase the focus on the responsibility for these interests being held in ICANN, but it's not exclusively ICANN, and I have no desire to remove the sentence. I have a desire to make the sentence work.
So, Rosemary here, suggestion, if we put ICANN and its stakeholders have an interest?
Too narrow.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Rosemary. All stakeholders should... What do you think about? All stakeholders should
should have an interest.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's a statement that is generally true. All the stakeholders should have an interest in providing choice and avoiding monopoly. What do you think about that, Tobias?
Yes, that would make it a normative statement,
yes.
as I read it. And mm-hmm. and normative statements can't be false.
Yes.
So if we subscribe to that statement, and I would do so, then I would be happy.
That works.
Okay, good. So if we, Steve, if you can just make that all stakeholders should have an interest, then I think we've...
Carlos, okay with that? And Carlos, yep. okay with that as well?
Yeah, of course.
Great. Mm-hmm. So it's now normative. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's move down mm-hmm. to advice on measures. And there's a little bit of introductory language before we dive into the real meat of the actual measures. And I believe Tobias wanted an extra sentence. It's a request that we add the distinction between obtainable and reportable. And it's really describing the stuff that's about to show up in the table. Is that right?
Yes, well, we're using the categories of obtainable and reportable further below, but we don't really explain what we mean by obtainable and reportable.
Great. Let's take it as on faith that any term used in the table should be explained. And you saw that I had written an explanation for the word relative incidence. And so let's put notes in there for what obtainable mean, what reportable mean, mm-hmm. and... doubtful, things like that, moderate. Great. Let's agree on principle. I don't think we need to wordsmith it all right now in front of everyone, but all terms should be defined.
Yep.
Beautiful. Are we ready to go? The part of the call where the real difficulty lies is going through the table.
I think we're ready to go.
Good. So we're in consumer trust. Mm-hmm. Barry, if you're still with us, what's your recommendation on how to go through these?
Start at the top and then just ask if everybody agrees with the metric that we have defined within the measure of consumer trust and the wording specifically. I think the obtainable, reportable, we might be off one or two on a few of those, but, you know, we might need to change them there and then just validate the source. I don't think there's I think everything else that we have in the spreadsheet is not as much relevant within the advice letter, such as how we categorize them and those kinds of things.
Great. I would make a Barry and I discussed this last week, but this potential, we ought to have a column at the right of this that says, what is our recommended 3-year target?
Yeah.
In other words, I know that we've deferred targets to the end of this, and given the time, we're never going to get to the targets on this call. So as we fly through this table, if anybody can recommend a target, you'll see that I put together some examples of things that could be targets on page 9. All right, so the first two are DNS service availability, Registrant Data Directory Services, and the EPP. And Barry, this is meat and potatoes stuff between registrars and registries. In the case of DNS, it's for... resolvers and registries. They're all easy to obtain and easy to report, and we already have SLAs on the present space. Does everyone agree that we should keep these three as are? And if we did come up with a target, it would be the very same targets, 100, 98, and 98.
Yep.
There's no reason to say the new space should be any lower.
No, absolutely not. No, agreed.
Carlos, your hand is up.
No, sorry.
Thank you. Barry, was there anything else buried in the notes on your spreadsheet on the first three rows?
Negative.
Got it. The percent next one is the percentage uptime for a registrar. Barry, do you recall the origin of this, and why is it doubtful?
The origin is from the measures that were originally defined in the presentation back in Dakar, and it specifically called out registry and registrar. The reason why it's doubtful is within existing contracts, there are no SLAs required for registrars, although that may change with RAA negotiations. on some systems. I listed it as doubtful because I'm not going to speak for registrars, but they may or may not want to provide their service level data. And if they don't provide it, then we certainly can't report on it.
Question, do you think this was meant to be the uptime for the registrar's problem reporting page or the uptime for a registrar's who is service? Which specific services are we saying need to be up?
I specifically wasn't saying anything. If you recall, in our probably our first version, the original was just percent uptime registries, percent uptime registrars, and then the working group wanted to deep dive deeper. There is no diving deeper with SLAs that aren't defined yet. I mean, we can state, you know, that they still have the same RDDS availability and connectivity back into the EPP servers at the registry, but I personally don't have that skill level to know exactly which systems they use or not. But from my own point of view, if they aren't defined in a current ICANN contract and there's no change to a future RAA for the new GPLVs, at least as of this point, I'm not sure how we can define those.
Hmm. So the choice for our group is to keep this here with some sort of a call-out note that it's only applicable if the new RAA includes measurable metrics for things like who is availability and contact availability, or we can delete it entirely. What's the group's sentiment? Notation or deletion?
Rosemary here. I think notation. Because I think we're raising ideas and issues in the context of providing advice for consideration in preparing a review, and these are matters that I think should be on the table, even if it's not possible to do anything with them at the moment. They may inform later work on the RAA and other things. So other people?
This is Barry. There's several yes notation agreements in the chat.
Great. This is Steve. And I'll make a notation. I'll put only if the RAA includes service level agreements for availability of who is, services such as who is, and contact and complaints. Thank you. Let's go to the next one, which was the consumer survey of perceived consumer trust in the DNS relative to experiences before the GTLD expansion. And the survey could measure experiences with malware and spam. Olivier, you'll recognize this stuff. And confusion about new TLDs. So that box, that row expanded, because on the last call, Olivier had some extra consumer trust items. And the consensus of the group was for me to jam those into the consumer survey line.
Mm-hmm.
I hate calling it difficult. Well, they're doing a who is survey now as part of the who is review. It's expensive, but Barry, what's your thinking behind difficult?
This is strictly my own interpretation, and it's only because I've never seen a survey like this before. I'd like to throw out the disclaimer that any of these assignments are my assignments alone, and that's it.
Yeah. I'm thinking this should be moderate. I really do. It would be costly. It would take some smart survey design. It's far from impossible, and I wouldn't even go so far as taking it up into the difficult category. It's all a matter about the commitment and the intent.
This is Rosemary with a funny suggestion. Could we replace difficult with groundbreaking?
I like it. it is essential groundbreaking.
You know, I'm sure this saying comes from the Australian Armed Services too, but the American services in the Pacific in World War II had a group called the CVs, and those were construction brigades, right? And they said the difficult we do right away. It's the impossible that takes a little longer.
Yes.
Only a little longer, that's right. Oh, I think all engineers have that credo somewhere in their history.
Well, this is Steve. It's my view that each of these groups of metrics ought to have a couple that are difficult. That's fine. Mm-hmm. This would only be the one of two in here that are difficult. I don't want to make it seem as if it's impossible. So
Olivier here, I just wonder about the use of the word difficult, since the Who Is survey is underway. And in fact, I'm really sorry, Rosemary, but then this wouldn't be groundbreaking, because the Who Is survey is the groundbreaking part.
That's just true, Olivier.
Follow-up. So, you know, darn, we just passed by one of these moments. But I think we'll probably know more about how difficult it is to obtain that data once we've actually learned lessons from the Who Is. And whatever the Who Is survey was marked as, we'll probably be able to mark this one as one level less than the Who Is one, since we will have learned from the mistakes and seen how it works. Thank you.
Why I have it yellow moderate?
Sorry, Cheryl, what was that? Make it a moderate?
I'd make it a yellow moderate. I really would.
Mm-hmm. So moderate and moderate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very pleased with the spreadsheet accordingly.
Great, thank you. Olivier, did I capture those extra sentences under survey pursuant to what you asked for? Experience with malware, spam, and confusion about new GTLDs. It's really just a question on a survey.
Here. It's Olivia here. You did fantastically well. So
great. Thank you, Matt. Underneath, next to it, in terms of recommended three-year target, that's a hard one. But in assessments, you could say a relative. We would want the survey to reveal an improvement, not a decline, but an improvement on most, if not all, measures of trust. Should we be so bold?
Well, yes. Well, the target should definitely be Rosemary here. Sorry, the target should definitely be improvement. So we'd want to capture that by trending upwards. It's a loose target, isn't it? Improving rather than moving from 10% to 15% or whatever.
It is, but the survey itself is going to be measuring people's perceived improvements.
Yes.
And what you'll get is some people will say it's improved a lot, it's improved a little, it's the same or it's worse. And if X percent of the respondents, you know how tough it is on surveys to have a definitive answer.
Yes. Yes.
It'll be qualitative stuff at any stage. At this stage, it will be qualitative stuff. Mm.
Yep. No, I'm okay. I'm okay with that. Improving.
Yeah, four surveys down the track, we can then say there's been a 15% improvement in the perception of.
Yeah.
But survey one and two,
nah.
Great. Okay. Let's go to the next two. Mm-hmm. The next two have to do with one of the key measures of compliance at ICANN. And I've often made the argument that ICANN only does two things. It makes policies and it enforces contracts and policies. That's all it does. So when they enforce, part of the enforcement process is to issue what's called breach notices. For either contract matters, contract breach, or for policy breaches. And the same thing happens to registrars for either contract, which is to say agreement, or policy compliance matters. Now, Barry, you sent around some of the presentation that Maggie gave in Dakar, and would that lead us to have a different vocabulary for this?
Not by my read, no. I think we're capturing it.
And do you think, based on Maggie's what she can capture in her rudimentary systems, do you think easy and easy are still the right designation?
As long as we're specifically notating formal breach notices sent to the contracted parties, then yes, those are, and Paul is raising his hand, so I'd welcome his input.
Yeah, all right. So I guess I'm a little nervous about the metric being quantity. You know, part of it is, you want to go after the people that deserve the breach, but if you set a quantity goal of, let's say, 10. Well, if everybody's playing, doing what they're supposed to be doing, 10 would be an arbitrary number to pick. So you want it to be as a percentage of, you know, anybody that's surfaced that is categorized or is a potential as a breach, that we have done the work to make sure that it was followed up, and whether issued a breach or the registrar had been fixed the issue.
No hokey look.
We are very comfortable, Paul, with the concept of relative incidence, and we defined it earlier, and it even shows up on the next row. So we definitely got that. I believe we were concerned here that there are so few breach notices that any breach notices are worthy of attention. It still brings a problem to mind to say how many is too many. It might be that we would measure it relative to the legacy GTLDs. But what do the folks on the phone think? Do you want to try to say that a three-year target for this is to have no breach notices by the third year?
No.
Or do we think that should be relative? What do folks think?
Should be relative. No is no. No breach target is a silly target in my view. It's like trying to get 100% uptime on something.
So are we more than likely to make this a relative to the legacy TLDs? And not relative to what the legacy TLDs had in 2011, but relative in the same year to the legacy TLDs. They should be no worse than TLDs that were in place prior to the expansion. I'm just
right.
Throwing some stuff out here.
Yeah.
And when I say no worse than, we would say the relative incidence of breach notices should be...
Should not significantly differ negatively compared to blah, blah, blah.
So the relative incidence of breach notices in new TLDs should be lower than, equal to or lower than?
Equal to or lower than, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Less than or equal to incidents in legacy TLDs in the same time period.
Mm-hmm.
Great. If we end up with a fifth column on here for the targets, it will make the document more unwieldy, but it will mean that people, when they review it, they'll see both the definitions of the measures and they'll see the targets all in one place. Now that we've put targets next to a few of them, how are folks feeling about adding the recommended three-year target to this table?
Yes, I like that idea.
Anyone else?
Yeah, Rosemary, I agree with that, because if we don't have any indication for people of what we're thinking about in terms of targets, it might be that our measures will make some people very nervous, that you go from the measure to, you know, a really unworkable target. So I think we've got to give some sort of indication of what we're thinking.
If we were to agree to add the column, then all of page 9, where I drafted some text for targets,
mm-hmm.
is really just explanatory.
Mm-hmm.
I would move all that up before the table, wouldn't I? So that people would see our explanation before
yes.
they see the column.
Yes, you would. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve, this is Barry. In terms of making these charts not so wieldy, we can modify these last few pages to be landscape so that we get
yes.
some more room across as well.
Great point, man. Great point.
Yep. While you're on the same topic of the format, this is Paul,
mm-hmm.
I would sort the obtainable and reportable, sort them in order by section from easy, moderate, difficult. That
mm-hmm.
way, as the board reviews those, they can say, oh, these are the easy ones, these are the moderate, these are the difficult. That
Paul, for the ease of review, I'm sorry, Paul. This is Steve. For ease of review, I can see that benefit. But frankly, they're organized this way very carefully on purpose because they are things that are grouped together are measures of the same aspects of consumer trust, like the first four or five have to do with the first half of the definition of consumer trust. And then there's a bunch in a row that have to do with complaints and incidences. So the purpose of keeping them grouped that way is if you get to a given category and there's a couple of moderates and a couple of easies, you're fine. I think that reorganizing them, you lose the chain of thought that we went through in keeping them in this order.
Then you may want to add something that says, here's the subgroupings you're thinking about these things. Yeah, make it an extra row that says, for this grouping, and then you list the metrics.
Barry, didn't you have, thank you, Paul. Barry, did we have general groups in the Excel sheet?
Correct. It's column D called category, and it's simple things like SLAs versus RPMs versus mitigation versus abuse and fraud. But I'll add that that was only my interpretation to those. And so if we choose to include this in the advice letter, we should probably review these as well.
All right. So what I will do in the next draft is put a row above each what I think are logical groupings so that it's more clear why they're organized this way. But Paul, what worried me is by organizing them by easy and hard, that would invite the board to only look at the easy ones. We don't want that. We want to be groundbreaking.
I know.
All right, let's get moving here. We have a bunch now that I think are really easy. Well, I shouldn't say that. They're moderate. And these have to do with the quantity and relative incidence of complaints for things like UDRPs and decisions for UDRP, URS complaints and decisions, and violations. So there's a sets of, there's quite a bit of statistics that make their way into the next six rows. Any thoughts on those?
This is Barry. I will add that I only added moderate here just because in terms of the collective universe of all UDRP complaints and future URS complaints out there, ICANN doesn't track those statistics. It's only those types of proceedings that result in an escalation where a domain wasn't transferred for the most part where ICANN gets involved. And Paul can correct me if I want, but I only assigned moderate because for the most part we don't collect it. It's not to say that that information couldn't be easily bought. And I'll also add, we only have 2 minutes left for this session. And I imagine people need to leave as well.
Yes, thanks, Barry. It's Rosemary here. I was going to just make that point that we're almost run out of time on this call. So should we quickly come back to the 31st of January suggestion? Because it seems to me that we are going to need that call. And just thinking about my own circumstances, I think I can do it because, for me, in fact, it'll be Wednesday morning, not Tuesday.
Yeah, it's now Wednesday. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'll be back to do that call. So I think what we need to do is get other people to respond to the doodle poll, but I think our progress today, although it's been terrific, is taking us in the direction of really needing to have that extra call.
Right.
Rosemary, is Barry. If that is the case, based on the latest of the poll, and I can send this out again just to remind people, but so far, if you were to attend, that it would only be Olivier and Wendy that wouldn't be able to attend. John Berard, Tobias, Cheryl, Steve, I imagine you'll probably be able to make it.
No, I cannot do the 31st, Tuesday. Oh. I could do Monday, but not Tuesday.
Okay.
I tell you, how about I send out a new poll and we get a little groundbreaking here and maybe try a Monday or a Thursday.
Or a Wednesday.
And,
well, I, it's not a problem, but if it's your Monday, I can't make what is effectively my Tuesday because my 31st, your 30th, I'm in a strategy meeting for a board all day.
So we might have to give the option of the 1st as well, Barry. Just push it out one day more.
I'll do it from the 31st, 1st, and 2nd, so the entire middle of next week, and we'll see where we can come up with. Mm-hmm. And then I will remind the team, we also do have our normally scheduled session on the 7th, as to which we can finish up, package up, and then put a bow tie on it.
Again, let me do a quick poll with the folks on the call. Do you think we can get this done with two more calls?
Rosemary, yes.
I think we have to.
Yep. We can.
Great. I love that can-do attitude.
This is Barry, and I, you know, we're, you know, I think once we get past the RPMs, we're effectively halfway through many of the metrics here. Mm. Not to say that we might get into a little bit of the weeds when we get into choice and competition part, but we're about halfway through.
Mm.
Great. I will volunteer to keep the pen for another draft and promise to get it around in 24 hours, unless somebody wants that pen.
I think it looks good in your hands.
And
right.
Steve, you and I might want to get together offline and figure out which columns and that kind of stuff we're going to do in this next version.
I know. And so what I'll do is quickly mock it up and get it into your hands and let you give it a quick review. You can call me after you get that and before we send it to the whole group. Would that be all right?
Simple.
Great. I'm going to do it tonight while I'm watching this ridiculous political scene here in the United States.
Well, send us a sentence or two on that as well.
Oh, it's an absolute embarrassment. Mostly I would say, I'm sorry.
we still love you, Steve. Don't worry.
All right, everyone. Thanks very much.
You
all right.
Can't help about your thanks political
so
world, and you know.
Too bad. All right, folks. We'll talk soon, I guess, is where we need to finish this today.
Great. Thank
okay,
you.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.